This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, I'd like to welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 2 Legal Regulatory Issues meeting on the 1st of February, 2018. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. I would like to remind all participants also to please state your name before speaking for recording purposes. And if you would please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting back over to Michael Fleming.
Thank you, and thank you everyone for joining us this week. I know it's rather difficult with a lot of events and sessions going on, but still, thank you, and good morning, and good evening, and good night to some of us. This week we'll be discussing closed generics. This is a topic that has been probably our most controversial one. And so rather than spend a lot of time pushing forward in a one feasible path forward, what I'd like to do is kind of summarize what we've been talking about and not go discuss the harms and the merits of closed generics, but rather see if we can at least address four areas where we might be able to make recommendations, not four areas, I'm sorry, four recommendations, four possible paths forward, if you will. We don't need to decide on one. If we can kind of further sand these out, they're rather rough at the current time, but I want to make that the goal of today's call. But before I do that, I just want to ask really quickly, as is always a mandatory is a mandatory action, is to ask if, does anyone have any SOI updates? Hearing none, seeing no raised hands, let's go ahead and move forward on to our recap on closed generics. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. There we go. Okay. So what have we done up until now? Well, we've discussed what a closed generic is and how it is currently defined in the current registry agreement. I don't think we need to cover that again in this call. We've covered why we are talking about this, mainly because the ICANN board asked us to discuss this as a part of subsequent procedures. I feel that that's fully understood at this point. We've also addressed how in the current process of new GTLDs and the application procedure, as well as signing the registry agreement, there are ways that can be interpreted. Now, I'm not saying that these are exceptions, but they are interpreted within the community as ways of being an exception to the closed generics rule of not allowing them. There's the Spec 13 brand registry exemption to the code of conduct, and there's also applying strict criteria for registering a domain and what is a generic OpenNet TLD. We've also analyzed the pros as closed generics as an innovative business model, and cons, proposed harms to concerns and public interests that were raised in public comments when ICANN asked for feedback for how to address closed generics. We've analyzed feedback from CC2 comments about how to pursue policy development. And we've also looked at objection procedures that were based upon the expectation that an applied for string would be a closed generic. We've seen successful objections as well as unsuccessful objections. And I do note that we've also had special speakers come and talk to us. We've had Kathy, we've had others as well. Unfortunately, their names do not come to my mind at this late hour. My apologies. Yes, Mitch McHaley, as well as my apologies. The name can't put my finger on it right now. But we do know who they are. And could we get to the next slide, please? And a part of our last call, what we've discussed is that in the NGPC's direction to the GNSO, we are to carry out policy work in regards to the exclusive register access for generic strings serving a public interest goal. We have specifically laid that out. Now, the majority of comments concerns about closed generics stretched from a very wide aspect of what could be considered be the public interest or how it harms the public interest. but the interpretation of who these parties are not only registrars, but registrants, business consumers, as well as everyday internet users. Now, those in support of allowing closed generics saw it as an opportunity for innovation, creativity, and also a way to protect the public interest. And after careful consideration of the harms and merits, we found that it's very difficult to address potential harms or merits without documented evidence of either. Alleged harms. Now, in that aspect, we've looked at the objections as what is proposed evidence, but at the same time, we've not been able to see this as actual evidence because technically a closed generic has not been allowed in the current round, so therefore we've not been able to address these alleged harms in full. We've also only seen that these are potential or alleged merits, probably two words that don't go together, but at the same time, we've only seen the potential merits in theory. We've considered predictability as well. How could we predict an application to be closed generic? So on our last call, we did reach a point where we saw a kind of a neutral area, at least an area that we could maybe come to terms on, which I think will set the foundation for our path forward. We found that if a closed generic could be considered in the public interest, then it may be beneficial to allow for this to occur. We discussed the possibility of allowing for a closed generic if we could allow for objection procedure to an application, or if we could allow the applicant to be in check, make sure that they must follow a strict audit of their registry to make sure that they are following certain rules. Next slide, please. Now, as for paths forward, these are very rough, and they stretch from the extremes, and they are also in-betweens. There's four ways that we could move forward, I think. One is the obvious. We can bring policy up to date with the existing registering agreement that closed generics should not be allowed. We could also allow closed generics, but require that applicants clearly demonstrate the closed generic is to serve a public interest in their application. This would require the applicant to reveal details about the goals of the registry. This could also be interpreted that they may need to reveal aspects about the business model, an area that we've discussed that ICANN doesn't want to get involved in. But all the same, it is one conceivable path forward. And with this, we would also establish an objections process for closed generics that is modeled somewhat similar to the community objections. Now, the third area I think that we could explore this would be allows closed generics, but require the applicant to commit to a code of conduct. This would not require the applicant to reveal specific details about the goals of the registry, but rather commit to an annual self-audit, much like the ones that are already necessary for those that have exemptions to the code of conduct, those that follow that have a specification 13, or those that must demonstrate how they are in line with the code of conduct. It's a late night. All the same, along with this, we'd establish an objections procedure for closed generics that is modeled somewhat similar to the community objections again. And then the fourth area that we could look at moving forward is to allow closed generics with no regulations, but establish an objections process for closed generics that is modeled on community objections. These are just the ideas right now that I have scrubbed together for potential paths forward. I'd like to spend this meeting, the majority of it, discussing how we can better sand them out, if you will. So, Alan, you have a question already. Does two imply a panel to judge whether the proposal is indeed in the public interest? At that point, what I would think is that we would establish an objections procedure that would much rather have that. Part of the application question itself. So I think the idea of putting those details into the application is not rather to have a panel judge it, but rather to allow for those that might find it necessary to make an objection but at the same time giving the applicant the benefit of the doubt, if that makes sense. So I'd like to open the floor for any questions or ideas about how we can better wordsmith the, well, not necessarily wordsmith, but better organize these and see if they we could come to perhaps an agreeable standpoint. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you. If there were only one applicant and they are proposing something, quote, in the public interest and no one has an objection, I can see that going through. I would consider the situation rather more problematic if there were multiple applicants for the same string, each of them claiming they have their own flavor of what is in the public interest. And at that point, there's almost an obligation on ICANN to pick the one that is more in the public interest. And, of course, that implies judging that. And I like the end point, but, I'm not quite sure how you get there. The whole process seems fraught with the potential for either abusing it, either by making a frivolous objection or objecting because you have a competing applicant application. It doesn't look like a clean way forward is what I'm saying.
That's a great point, Alan, and I do admit that we need to think this through, of course, more so, but just to give us an idea for the current time, I think that this is a way to consider for a path forward, but in terms of defining the public interest, and I don't think you necessarily were going in that direction, but to have a panel judge whether or not it's in the public interest, I think we've already seen it's very difficult. WorkTrack 3 already tried to define the public interest at one point, I think, with the community. Trying to define community, but within that, we've had the discussion of public interest, and it just did not go anywhere. So many different interpretations of that. So, Gigi, you had your hand raised?
I did, but I took it down because I think it's been addressed that the question remains, who would judge if an applicant is proposing something that's in the public interest. I mean, I like that concept, but the question of who decides what's the public interest is a big gaping question.
That's a very good point. Christina, you asked if we could take them in turn, and definitely we can do that. Before we do that, Christine, you had a question about combining 2 and 3. I think that's also a great idea, and that was actually the basis for this, is have 2 and 3 to go together in the last call. And if that's how we want to proceed with this, that's definitely a possible path forward. So to take these in turn, as Christina has pointed out, I think we've already had enough debate on 1 and 4. What would happen if we bring policy up to date with existing registry agreement? Well, then there would just be no closed generics. If we did it with 4, then it would be somewhat chaotic, as we've had plenty of discussion on that. But if we could take, Kathy, just 1 second, if we could take the majority of discussion in regards to 2 and 3 or any other possible ideas, then I think that would be a great way to make the best of this meeting. I'm hearing a bit of background noise. We just make sure that's muted. And then I'll let Kathy go and then Alexander. So, Kathy, you go on ahead.
Hi. Good evening, Michael. Good morning, everybody. This is Kathy Kleinman with a cold from NamesCon in Vegas. So I would hate to see us dismiss 1. I don't think we have had enough discussion about it. Especially, I wish someone would open up the slides because I came in late. But I heard, I was listening, I called in first and then came into the slides. If we have it established, I didn't hear the word competition. And I heard the word consumer, I heard the word public interest, but I didn't hear the word competition. So let me pause, Michael, and just ask you, has that word even been said today? as a problem with closed generics.
So Kathy, I think we've taken enough discussion.
That's the basis.
Kathy, I think we've taken competition off the table because we have had plenty of discussion in our past meeting, and that we figured that ICANN does not want to be in the field of competition law and discussing what is best for competition in that aspect.
Okay, then I don't know where you made that decision or what meeting that was made. That decision was certainly not made in the last meeting on closed generics when we were looking at the public interest. That is the basis of the community objections. That is the basis of thousands of people, organizations, small businesses writing into ICANN when it did raise this issue to the public. It is competition. That's generic words involving industries. That the whole basis is competition, that you don't allow one competitor. Because what we're forgetting here is that all the second-level domains are going to be owned by one competitor in the field. And so, let's just remind ourselves of that. So if it's a .dot brand, that makes sense that Sony or IBM would own all the second-level domains. If it's .dot search, .dot cloud, you've got a massive competition issue. So let's. I think you have to keep it on the table. If you take it off, you're already making your decision right there. Thanks, Michael.
Right. In regards to competition being off the table, what I mean by that is not that we're taking it completely out of the picture, is that we're not talking about the harms specifically in this aspect. And just one minute. We're not talking about harms in this aspect because we've already discussed fully the harms. We have not been able to come to an agreement on the harms. We've not been able to come to a full agreement on the merits. And that's why we're trying to find a way, and we did find a way last time, that if a closed generic was in the aspect of the public interest, and we're not going to define what the public interest is, but if you could find a way for a closed generic to be in the public interest, then we could see a path forward for it. Now, why I'm approaching this not to take much time to discuss number one is because we've already seen how the alleged harms.
No harm. They've been proven, guys. They've been shown.
They have not been proven.
Trademark law, guys. It's part of the competition aspect of basic trademark law.
These are alleged terms. We have not seen.
Competitor does not get to monopolize a generic word. So let's not write out the record, Michael. We've talked about this extensively, and when you write it out and sanitize it and neutralize it, you lose. You lose the value of the contribution.
Kathy, I'm not disagreeing that we don't have alleged harms. We do have alleged harms, but the discussion on whether or not those are proven or not has not led us to an area of agreement, and we've worked in that area fully. We've extinguished that path. Now I'd like to see if we can move on a path forward that would allow. Now I'd like to see us if we can move on a path forward without talking about the merits and the alleged harms, the potential merits, and the alleged harms, that we can move in an area forward that could be seen to be agreeable. And if a closed generic is in the public interest, that is the best chance we have. Now, Alexander, you have your hand raised. Would you like to go next?
Yes. So I think to follow up with Kathy, that we maybe have to distinguish between two cases or clouds of cases. If you compare .bank and .makeup, for example, I think .makeup was one of the TEDs that had been applied as a closed generic. I don't know how it ended up in the end. And obviously the reason to make it closed generic here was to keep control over this vertical. Whereas .bank was not a closed generic. I mean, it is kind of more or less a closed generic or it has the effect of a closed generic because it was a community application. The reason here was to make sure that only members of the community can apply for. So one reason why we maybe should have closed generics is what is if .bank would not have received the community designation? Would they still have been able to let only banks apply? Or would that... Would you be able to let only banks apply if you're not assigned as a community application, or could you maybe facilitate that through a closed generic? You say, okay, we are a closed generic, and we will give it only to our members, which are banks.
Thank you, Alexander, for the question. I'm not sure I understand it fully, but I think I do understand it well enough to answer it. And the aspect of allowing only banks to register it, in this .bank currently only does that, that is the criteria for .bank. That kind of goes back to the exception idea I think we've seen, where you apply certain criteria for registering in the TLD. I wouldn't be a closed generic, but an open TLD with strict requirements, I guess, is the best interpretation of that.
The idea here would be if you have kind of not really a community targeting top level domain, but a stakeholder targeting membership targeting top level domain, and it's a little bit difficult to have eligibility restrictions. You could say, okay, I'm applying for it as a closed generic, and then I'm hand selecting or I'm providing it to the members I think it's valid for. So that would be a way to use a closed generic, and it has some kind of public interest because it might be, let's say, some military-related, not FBI, for example, yeah? And the FBI says, well, we want to keep this for ourselves, and we want to decide who gets the FBI domain names, and we don't want to have a public eligibility restriction here because we want to do this how we want it.
That's a good example. But so in the sense of that, I think let's remind ourselves that closed generics is for an entity. Sorry, closed generic is supposed to be for an entity. Midnight. A closed generic is specifically for the entity that runs it as well as its affiliates. How you define affiliates can be very broad, but at the same time, bank isn't necessarily for just its affiliate, for just itself. It's for anyone that is a bank. So I think in that sense, it kind of goes outside of the closed generic aspect. Am I not answering the question fully? Maybe if you could provide more details.
No, it was just kind of, the idea was to allow closed generics for cases where eligibility restrictions kind of don't really work, and where the applicant could make a case that he wants to the registrants, and that in his ability to do so lays the public benefit.
So that's I think that's what we're moving toward as kind of being in the public interest. Jeff gave a good example of dot Red Cross, maybe I think it was, and so that was it. Dot Red Cross. Yes, Jeff had a good example about that, and them doing public operating in the public interest for like charity and the works of going across and doing what they do. Kathy, you have your hand raised as well, and then Greg, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Hi. Great. Thanks, Kathy, again. So I think Alexander's actually made some really good points, that we have these other mechanisms specifically created for the vast majority of situations that we're trying to deal with. So the community objection requires that you provide a glow, you know, however it's going to be revised pursuant to this working group. I assume you're still going to have to make the case that there's a global group, so you're not restricting .lawyers just to French lawyers. It's for the world, or you're opening it up. I know that's not a community, but or .music. So the community objection serves that type of public interest in opening and closing, but opening. And then the other thing that was mentioned in the chat was a non-community TLD can have registration eligibility restrictions. So we've got that covered as well, and that is the .lawyer scenario where you have to prove you're a lawyer or .cpa. So I think we've got this covered. So, and I know you don't want to hear it, the main reason for a closed generic, and we saw it again and again, we predicted it and then we saw it again and again, is to have a major competitor come in to lock out their other competitors. And it's a competition issue, and that's why we don't allow generics to be registered as trademarks by one member of the industry, because it would block out others from using a common name. In this case, we do need to keep these open for, so everyone can register and everyone can be on an equal playing field in the online world. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Greg, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Thanks. It's Greg Shatton. I'm sorry I was a bit late to the call. I'm concerned in listening to this that we're not kind of sticking to the to our defined terms in terms of what is closed and what is generic. I would think it would be pretty clear that neither FBI or Red Cross is generic, and therefore is not part of our discussion at this point. Really would consider those maybe closer to dot brands in a sense, and maybe in a real sense, actually, but certainly generics. And secondly, hearing talk about your restrictions are not closed. I think, Michael, you did hit the nail on the head that a closed TLD is one that is utilized only by the owner and or operator and its affiliates. Maybe there's some interesting, you know, things at the edges of what is an affiliate. But by and large, you know, I think we're talking, and I think Kathy did say it right as well, we're talking about somebody taking a truly generic term like makeup and having one company that makes makeup take that TLD and shut out every other makeup company and thereby take what would appear to be sort of a public square and turn it into a walled garden. And where everything comes from one company, so there is no choice in a TLD where the name, where the top level string is one that is completely generic and describes the goods and services, goods or services that are being offered there. So I think we need to stick to our categories first and avoid scope creep or scope leap, and discuss, you know, really closed, really generic things as our only remit and figure out what to do with them. And I agree finally with the idea that really going between two and three on the list above is probably what makes the most sense in terms of trying to see where we could settle in there. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. And I agree. We need to focus on two and three at this point. Susan, do you have your hand raised? Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I'd support trying to talk about two and three. I just want to flag. I think I understand the competition point that Kathy's making. But I do think that again, it always is kind of presupposing that every single registry that would is going to be a kind of pile 'em high and flog 'em cheap, you know, .com alternative. It doesn't allow for another way of working. And we've, you know, if we're honest and we look at the volumes of names that have been sold to date in the many, many, many TLDs that were completely open, you know, some of them have had less than stellar volumes being registered. And so, you know, there is you know, a point at which one could say, you know, what are we, why are we so concerned about this notion of closing a space off and competition when actually you know, an alternative business model could be just as valid, and there's not an infinite desire for infinite names.
Thank you, Susan. I think we're starting to broaden on the aspect of what is a closed generic and how it does, what falls in line with that. To address Susan's point, I do think that there's a lot of innovative business models that can benefit from the closed generics. That's a personal opinion. But as with my co-chair hat on in the facilitation, we've had a lot of good discussion on this. And let's not go back to the specifics of what a closed generic. Let's just now that we've had this kind of refresher, let's try to remain specific on that and just keep in mind that, yes, there is a very big interest of public interest. There's a very big picture of public interest and alleged harms along with, but at the same time, there's also very innovative business models, as Susan has suggested. So with that, if we were to kind of allow for if we were to consider 2 and 3, let's talk about these. In the aspect of 2, suggestion 2 here, it would require an applicant to reveal details about the goals of the registry. I know that the concern here was that this would be, revealing a business model that might be, that if revealed would reveal their secrets and isn't good for business. How could we phrase this to say that to satisfy the need to offer details in the application to the point to allow a third party to judge whether or not they need to file an objection? I think that is a good question to ask. And is there anyone that would like to offer input in regards to that? How could we phrase this to offer enough details in the application to not mark on the line of business models, but to offer enough details to provide input for third parties to consider whether or not they would want to file an objection? Alexander, you have your hand raised?
yes. So for the record, it's Alexander Schubert. Well, the problem is, having been a founder of an applicant for a community, even if within a community there are great concerns about certain applications, you need to find an entity that would object. And first, no one in the real world knows that there is an objection process or that there are applications in the first place. And even if people are made aware about other applications, it's very difficult for them to understand what is going on with ICANN, why is this impacting our community, and so on and so forth. But even if they understand that it's important, that it's impacting the community, it's really, really difficult for outsiders to start wading into this process and starting to create objections. So I wonder if there is not a certain lobby for a certain term, or even if there is a lobby, whether really objections will be created over generic terms. Who should do this work? Who should pay the money? And so on and so forth.
Thank you, Alexander. That's a good question. And before I before I offer input in regards to that, I think Christina had a good question about asking the question, if anyone had a problem with, or does anyone believe that section 18, which you had to describe the mission and the purpose of the TLD, whether or not that was insufficient, or in other words, could that be used as the kind of the details of whether or not someone would file an objection? In regards to Alexander's question, I'm just going to kind of see if Karen might be able to offer some input, but I think that the independent objector falls in lines with this in regards to objecting in the interest of the public interest. If I'm not wrong, do you all have any updates in regards to what your considerations for the independent objector might be? Or am I going into a completely different area?
Hi, Michael. This is Karen. No, we actually just discussed the role of the independent objector on our call on Tuesday, and we don't have a consensus. We haven't reached a consensus to make any changes to that role. We're discussing the effectiveness of that role. Right now I can't say that we're going to in a position to recommend anything different, if that's what you're looking looking for, but it's, you know, it's like a lot of things in our work tracks, it's still a work in progress. Does that answer your question?
Thank you, Karen. I think it does. And this was to address Alexander's question about who would object for the community, I think, if I interpret the correct question correctly. So I hope that, but let's discuss that a bit. I'm sorry?
Yes, that's right. I think it would be the IO.
The independent objection. Okay, Alexander, a quick follow-up.
Yeah, I raised my hand again. It's Alexander again. Well, if there is a community behind it, I mean, if you look at .makeup, there is no makeup community. The ones who would object, and it's also not the girls of the world who would, and some guys who would object to .makeup, also, they don't really care so much. It would, if anyone would object, it would be other makeup companies. The question is, do they monitor this? Do they understand what the impact would be for them? Probably not. And the independent objector obviously has also not objected. So, maybe no one kind of understands this creates a problem, so no one is going to object.
Thank you, Alexander. And in that sense, if we're talking about public interest, I kind of... that we'll weed out that discussion a bit more in that area. But not to be rude, but I kind of like to focus on the question 18 and whether or not that fills the aspects of the question I asked previously about giving enough details for whether or not to make a decision to object or not. Gigi, you have your hand raised, and then Kathy, you have your hand.
No, the answer is absolutely not. It doesn't give you much.
Kathy, I think I said Gigi has her hand raised.
Wait, Michael, am I on mute? Sorry, because I was going to tell you why it doesn't solve any problems.
No, it's Kathy. I asked for Gigi and then you, so
I
apologize.
Let you
go first.
Okay.
Hi, this is Gigi, and I guess I have a hard time understanding why it's okay to have makeup.com. And wouldn't there be other makeup companies that would object to that, but yet that's allowed? But we're looking at it like it's philosophically different to have that makeup. So I guess I'm not seeing where that philosophical difference is between a second-level domain and a third-level domain. So that's all. Thank you.
So that's a question that I don't have an immediate answer for, but let's take that one. Can we take that one offline? I think that there's a lot of interpretations that go into that, and I don't rather not spend majority of the calls focusing on that. I don't want to be rude, but I just think that if we can kind of focus on that aspect. And I agree with you. That's an important question to answer. But I do try to want to focus on the class aspect of question 18. Kathy, go ahead.
And I'd love to talk to Gigi about the difference between a second level domain, which is one, and a top level domain, which can potentially have millions of domain names underneath it. So that it's really important to talk about, and that it has been established in community objections and other places that a GTLD is very, very different than a domain name itself, including in application fees. So question 18 doesn't solve our problem at all. Question 18 is this lovely PR pitch by the applicant for the wonderful things they're going to do with their top-level domain. No one is going to tell you in question 18, our real goal here is to lock out all our competitors from the generic word of the industry. We didn't see it in .cloud in question 18. We didn't see it in .search. We didn't see it in any of the many, many GTLDs that were applied for as closed generics and that were then changed to be open. The whole idea here is monopolizing the second-level domains, dozens, hundreds, thousands, or millions, to keep them all for you, even though you know, you've got lots of competitors in the same field. And McKaylee has talked often about when .cloud was opened up, it's really become the space for all sorts of innovators in the cloud industry, large and also small. It's really where the industry is growing. So thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Jeff, that's good feedback. Jeff, you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. This is Jeff Newman, and I apologize. I missed a bunch of the call earlier in the call. But what I wanted to try to get us back to is that there are passionate arguments on multiple sides of this issue. I think what we should be focusing on right now in order to help us draft an initial report is, you know, obviously we have no consensus on a common path forward. That's pretty clear in hearing the different conversations. But what I think we should do is say that the working group sees these as potential options that we would like comment on. Not even potential, possible, I guess, options that we would like to get comment back on the community, going from the extremes, which is, you know, as was said, you know, we could allow it to completely go forward, or the other extreme, which is we do everything the same as we did today, or anything in between. What I think would be helpful, rather than discussing the merits of each position over and over again, is to just say, have we laid out all the possible options? Are there additional options that we should put out for public comment, models, if you will, to put out for public comment that we haven't thought of here, instead of spending so much time arguing for one or against one? Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. And I think that's a really good idea. So I open the floor to that. Do we have any other models or possible considerable paths forward that we could put in the draft or the first report, the initial report, and get feedback on? Because if we're going to get feedback in regards to this from the public thus having the best interest in mind for the public, then we'll have our chance in that initial report. So can anyone, Christina, you have your hand raised. Go ahead.
I'm not answering your specific question. Oh, Christina Rosette, Amazon Registry, for the record. I'm not answering your specific question, Michael. Let me just clarify. Is the intention that in the next 14 minutes we're going to settle on the possible paths that are going to go out for public comment? I think that would be helpful to understand. Because if the answer is yes, I think we really need to laser focus on that.
So my goal in the next 14 minutes is not to necessarily decide on one distinct possible path forward, but to present all of these. But the goal of this meeting was...
Which of these paths are going to go out for public comment? That I apologize for precise.
No, that's good. That's good. I like that. Yes, that is the intent, to have all these go out there. So I ask for feedback in regards to all of these. My intent was to see if we could have better discussion about how to organize the ideas behind these, to see if we might not want to change anything. So, Kathy, you have your hand up next. Go ahead.
I thought Jeff had his hand up next. I'm still thinking. I'm still putting together, because you're asking us to kind of stand on one foot. First, could you circulate the slides ahead of time in the future so we can really come in having thought about these?
We'll make our best effort to do so.
Okay, and I'm going
to
queue up after
Kathy,
Jeff,
if you want
finish
to jump in.
Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I think I just want to clarify, it's not just the next 14 minutes. We want to continue the discussion on the email list, but I think what we're saying is that I think our goal for the initial report should be, have we thought of the different options, different models that we could put out for public comment without expressing a view one way or another, any of the models, but just try to put it out there for public consumption so that they could provide feedback and maybe even their own models or hybrids of models. But I think that this is a productive discussion for the next 12 minutes, but also to keep on the email list so we can just make sure. Even if there are options you hate, I want to just make sure we've covered all the different scenarios that we can think of. Thanks.
All right, Kathy, you're up.
Okay, so some possibilities. So for number three, maybe create a 3A and a 3B. Allow closed generics, but require the applicant to commit to a code of conduct. This would require the applicant to reveal details about the goals of the registry and commit to self-audits. So that's one. You know, let them, if they're going to try to monopolize a generic term in their industry, tell people. That's the 18. That's the question 18. But much more so, if you're going to do this, you have to do it to a huge extent. So, again, you're asking us to do this on one foot, which is just not fair. But also notice, one of the things we've been talking about here is allowing the industry to respond. The obligation for that global notice to your industry had better be on the registry. Because as Alexander pointed out, and as others are thinking, you know, a lot of people are not following ICANN, and you can't expect them to. We're kind of a small part of the world. We follow ourselves, but others don't. So that the proof, and it would belong in both 2 and 3, that the proof of notice to the industry of the issue of the closed generic, you know, should be on the registry with when, you know, where the comments are due, when the comments are due, and some indication of how this is being done. That would be, because we haven't defined the public interest, then the onus of notice, you know, properly belongs on the industry itself that's trying to create the walled garden. So notice in 2 and 3. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Kathy. So that's kind of like a trademark gazette idea. But at the same time, that's an idea. So kind of a no objection, if you will, from the community or a silent voice. Christina, you have your hand up.
Yeah, thanks. Christina Rosette, Amazon Registry, for the record. I think Jeff has said some of what I was going to say in the chat. Namely, you know, I think question 18 did, as far as I can tell, a very adequate job. We've all heard in great detail and on numerous occasions about the community objection that Kathy filed. And if she hadn't had the information from question 18, she wouldn't have been able to file it. So I guess I'm a little, I'm not clear as to why that information is considered to be inadequate. And I do object to the idea of any particular quote-unquote category of applicant having to put out special notice. I think that just leads us into a slippery slope where everybody's got to put out notice to everyone about every string. It seems that ICANN's reveal day, and based on the total cumulative number of objections that were filed, that process seems to have worked very well. If there are, in fact, potential objectors that didn't object or whose interests weren't represented by objectors who did object, I think that's useful information that the working group as a whole would like to have, because I think it crosses over into various groups. But I don't think this is the time or the place to get into that discussion.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you. So that's an so yes, that we had a lot of responses, and I'm just going to leave that as is with that in mind. But Kathy, you did bring up another idea about combining three, and that was essentially these two were originally combined when I kind of took them from our last call. So would it be in? Do we have any comments on combining 2 and 3, just to have that one option rather than having two separate options in that aspect? Greg, you have your hand up, and Christina, I think you have your hand raised, but I think it's old hand, so I'm just going to give it to Greg.
It's a new hand, but I'll go after Greg.
Thanks. This is Greg Chatton. Thank you, Christina, as well. I think 2 and 3 are fundamentally different. The idea of public interest, which is, of course, a famous morass, obviously something that we want to deal with and honor, but at the same time, it's kind of like nailing mercury to the wall. I think that, you know, 3 is really different in that we're talking about a code of conduct, which would be internal, but not to a public interest kind of demonstration or per se. And so I think they are not the same. They may have some overlap in a sense, objections process and the like. But fundamentally, they're looking at the two different methods of kind of, let's say, qualifying closed generic. There may be other potential methods besides those two before you get to number 4, which is basically laissez-faire. Also, I think that the idea of a public notice, I think, really gives me concern in terms of how to implement it and what the essential, expectation is from it. I think that it really, could lead us down a real rabbit hole. I would certainly not. I think in terms of number 3, I don't think it's apposite at all. In terms of number 2 and the public interest, there's somewhat more of a notice issue there, but not necessarily notice to competitors alone, since we're talking about the public interest. But I would have real reservations about the idea of kind of notice. And I also agree with Jeff that the industry and observers from business, have done a good job in many times in doing this. Maybe we have to consider more generally how to labor in a little less obscurity overall. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Okay, I've got Christina and then Kathy, and then I'm probably going to draw a close to this.
I'm Christina Rosette, Amazon Registry for the Record. Two separate points. First, my view is that I think 3 standing alone has the potential to be more than adequate. That's generally the self-certification method is what's currently used by ICANN compliance. I trust that if they were finding that the certificates of compliance that they were receiving were later demonstrated to be false or inaccurate based on compliance investigations, that they certainly would have shared that information with us by now. In terms of the broader idea, I think what would potentially be more helpful is rather than assuming for the community how these should be combined, that what would be more productive would be to set them out separately, but also seek particular comment on whether or not the commenter believes that one or more of these should be combined, and if so, how and why.
Thank you, Christina. That's a very good suggestion. Kathy, you're next.
Great, thanks. So I'm responding to Julie Hedlund in the chat. So there's a 3B now about would require the applicant to reveal details about the goals of the registry in some kind of clear and substantive form. So not the PR, but, if they're going to do this, they have to tell. So what's missing here is a suggestion of the proof of notice to the community of competitors that the closed generic registry applicant will be closing out. This is not ICANN's job. It is, we don't know this world of competition, all these different worlds of competition. The registry is in the best position to provide the notice to their own competitors. They know the industry, and you can't rely on the largest trade associations in the world, guys, to bring the community objections. When we had the public comment, and I'm sorry to repeat history, but we need it, we heard from public interest groups that beauty was actually advertised by a public interest group in India talking about all the small groups that would be cut out by Estee Lauder if they were a closed registry on this. And lots of small companies, publishers, book vendors, all sorts of people responded that would never be able to bring a community objection. So the for both 2 and 3, this clear notice and proof of notification to your own competitors is just a clear process. It's much easier. Again, who's in the best position to communicate to their own world of competitors? It's not ICANN. It will be the registry. So if they're going to take this enormous step, they better let their competitors know. And they're in an excellent position to do it and to show us how they did it. Thanks. And put it in 18, or put it that plan in 18, in questions 18 or future question 18C or something like that. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Steve, you have your hand raised as well.
Thanks, Michael. This is Steve Chan from staff. And so I was just going to throw out an option for consideration is, a possibility is that somewhere in between, especially in the circumstances where the applicant is revealing the details of the goals of the registry, if there's a public interest commitment component, that might make sense. So one of the effects of that is also that it allows some element of a post-delegation dispute resolution policy as well. So after the fact, there's still some level of recourse for the community. In that particular case, for example, it would be the PIC DRP. So just one other option for the community or for the work track to consider. Thanks.
Thank you, Steve. That's actually very important. I think that we had that discussed in an earlier meeting, but let's not forget it. So definitely, I think if we have the objections, we'll obviously have a post a delegation dispute resolution procedure, which would probably become the PIC DRP as it is now, most likely. But at the same time, I think we had a lot of good suggestions in regards to this. Is there anyone that would like to have not the last word, but to say something, say any final ideas? Hearing none, I don't want to close off the discussion in the chat, as I think it's very, very good, and this has provides a lot of good feedback. But I invite us to continue that discussion over the mailing list. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. I know this is a difficult topic, but I think that we've made a lot. We have made progress, and let's continue this progress over the mailing list. And for those that are involved in intersessionals today, I look forward to joining you in the next few hours. So, thank you. This is Michael signing off from Japan. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Meeting has been adjourned. Have a great day, everyone.